the Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast, now with more interviews. It's a banner week for the podcast, not just because we get to talk about Skyline's win over Arlington Martin, Denton Geyer surviving a determined Innis, or Highland Park getting its 84-game home-winning streak snapped by an opponent from Arkansas who never punts. That's all good, but we've got two phone interviews on a regular season podcast for the first time ever. Skyline coach Derek Roberson talks to us about his team's win and his motivational strategies, and Ben Baby of the San Antonio Express News joins us to answer questions about that appalling attack on an official from two San Antonio J players last Friday. We've got all that, plus week three previews coming up on the podcast. And that was fun. Week two, a lot of good games. This is a Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast. I'm Corbett Smith. I'm sitting alongside Matt Wixon, the award-winning Matt Wixon.
You keep saying that. It's like you're trying to raise the bar and then just have me fall on my face.
We're trying to boost the esteem of this podcast.
Well, I appreciate it. Yes, I'm here.
An editor and writer extraordinaire.
Right.
Greg Riddle, who really is
We're talking dual threat,
No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, he's the ligaments that hold this awesome machine together here at Sports Day, and we appreciate it, Greg.
I appreciate it.
Man, there was a lot of big games, but I don't think anybody would pick a bigger game than what Arlington Martin and Skyline had on Friday night. We'll talk about that here in a second with Coach Derek Roberson, the winner at Skyline. And, man, that footage that we saw over the weekend, spearing and tackling that two San Antonio J players had against an official in a game against Marble Falls. Marble Falls now coached by former Lovejoy coach Matt Green. That has gotten national news. We're going to talk here in about 7 minutes or 8 minutes when he calls us in with the national expert on it. San Antonio Express News' Ben Baby will call us here on the Sports Day HS podcast, unless there's breaking news, which with that story.
When you're a national expert, sometimes you get pulled away.
I know. He was on ESPN. We'll talk to him a little bit about that. Matt.
Yes.
Any surprises in week two? I knew that Skyline had a puncher's chance in that game. I think I picked Martin by a touchdown, given how well they looked against DeSoto in the previous week. They really just took DeSoto out of its game plan entirely. But, man, Skyline looked really good.
Yeah, Skyline looked really good. And, there's so many different ways you can see it. I guess people were expecting that Martin might have a little bit of a letdown because it was such a big win over DeSoto the week before. But I give more credit to what Skyline was doing out there. Skyline's offense was pretty good, and I guess you would say it was good enough. But the story of that was the Skyline defense, which, I mean, as impressive as Martin was against DeSoto, moving the ball, scoring. At one point, wasn't Martin up 32-0 against DeSoto?
Yep.
And was doing a lot of great things. They couldn't do much at all against Skyline. Had, negative 20-some yards in the first quarter. By halftime, they only had about 50 or 60. And Skyline's defense was just solid in all facets. They dominated. If they didn't dominate, they certainly controlled up front.
Joe Wallace was incredible. Yes. You look up, and he was 3 yards in the backfield right after the snap.
Right. That front seven is fantastic. And, Eric Walker, Martin's quarterback, was on the run most of the night. And then the times when he did get some time back there to look around, Skyline's secondary held up their end of it. They were closing out on receivers, making great plays. Martin did drop one pretty much sure touchdown that was in the second half that was, maybe something that could have swung the game. But Skyline's defense made the big plays when they needed them. And they needed quite a few of them. Martin got off to that quick start with that kickoff return for a touchdown. But after that, Skyline just took control.
Yeah, 95-yard kickoff return to start the game by Martin's Tyler Wilson. And I thought, whoa, this is going to be, this could get a runaway just like last week, with DeSoto. But Skyline looked really assured on the next drive, put together a 10-play, 60-yard drive, then that defense took over. Maybe the special teams didn't to start the game, but the defense certainly held Martin. I think they held Martin to 29 yards at half, which against a team like that with all those playmakers, Nick Smith, Eric Walker, Christian Levy, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Now, Skyline did have that. They had a two-score lead in the second half. It did get cut to 2 points with about 2.5 minutes left, and then the Skyline offense went three and out. Martin had a chance, but it was a final desperation kind of pickoff by Brandon Johnson with an INT to seal it. And that is the win, 24-22. It's not the only big game of the weekend. I think everybody was looking at DeSoto and IMG Academy. IMG Academy, of course, with a litany of really 5- and 4-star prospects. I think I counted 9 5- or 4-star prospects from this current year's class, including quarterback Shea Patterson and the highest-ranked tight end, one of the best-ranked DBs, one of the best-ranked receivers, are really just a loaded team. They end up doing to DeSoto what a team like that should do, 47-29. IMG Academy with a win. DeSoto falls to 0-2 and really is turnovers again that undid DeSoto. DeSoto had a lot of problems with special teams and turnovers in that game against Arlington Martin. They had 4 turnovers in this game, 1 interception return for a touchdown, 1 fumble return for a touchdown, and you can't do that against a team of that caliber.
Yeah, I think IMG Academy is certainly the better team in that one, like you mentioned, with all the prospects they have. I mean, they're a national all-star team, but at the same time, DeSoto could have been much more competitive had they not made as many mistakes. And as a side note on DeSoto, I was interesting. I think DeSoto's football account was tweeting out, the people come out, kind of the haters or whatever come out when you're 0-2, but that the season is not over, and I would certainly agree with that. It's so early that, we've seen some teams that have had really rough starts become juggernauts by the end of the season. Euless Trinity always comes to mind. I know it's a different team, but I think DeSoto has the same kind of capability, and I certainly wouldn't be writing them off. They're 0-2, but they've played 2 very good teams.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Innis started 0-2 last year and went on and won 14 in a row after that and won the state championship.
That's right.
Yeah, the difference with DeSoto, though, is they're in the state's largest classification. They need to be the bully. They'll get a chance to do that this week against a 5A opponent in South Oak Cliff. We'll talk about games of the week in Part 3. How about this? Little RIP, maybe cue up some bagpipes here. We don't have bagpipe special effects, but
where's the producer?
Little Rock, yeah, you're looking at him. Little Rock, Arkansas, Pulaski Academy. Did a story about him last week. Went to Little Rock to interview their crazy coach, Kevin Kelly, who is certainly a unconventional guy if there ever was one. They take it to Highland Park, break an 84-game home winning streak there at Highlander Stadium, 40-13. I think if you're Highland Park fans, you got to be concerned. They only had 125 yards total offense. The biggest upset in all of this isn't Pulaski Academy breaking that streak. They punted.
Right.
They punted once, but they've only punted 7 times in 7 years coming into this game. We're talking about the defending state champs in Arkansas's Class 5A. There's 7 classes, although the top class is tiny.
How many times did they onside kick?
They onside kicked every time, and I don't think they recovered a single one of them in looking at it.
No.
And it was just a dominant performance.
Well, that being
that
said,
that defense did not have a single player on it. They had 1 player on that defense that was heavier than 200 pounds.
Well, that's what I was going to say, that to me, that's the biggest surprise or the biggest concern for Highland Park is that not that Pulaski scored 40 points, but it's that Highland Park couldn't score more against that defense. I thought maybe Highland Park would get outscored, but Highland Park had a tough time doing much of offense in that game.
Yeah, 125 total offense. Lane Hatcher, as a sophomore quarterback, has an impressive game for Pulaski, 4 touchdowns and 224 yards passing. This streak would have been broken this year. I don't think there's any doubt. From the first 2 games, it looks like Highland Park is a little down. They replace so many seniors every year. It's just one of those things that
it cycles. Once in a while, you're going to have a year.
It cycles
like that.
Through year to year. And, when you talk about that, you're going to have good years and you're going to have bad years. The big thing here is they're going to play Mesquite Horn later in the year at home. And Horn's loaded with talent, much more talent than what this Highland Park team has. So we will watch Highland Park as they progress through the season. And now let's join Ben Baby of the San Antonio Express News. What's that website? MySanAntonio.com. .com.
It's not BenBaby.com?
It is soon to be BenBaby.com.
Redirects to that.
Yeah.
Y'all are giving me too much credit. Shoot, y'all need to stop with that. But it's good hearing familiar voices. How are y'all doing?
We're doing good. I did see your footage on national television. That is pretty impressive. You look sharp.
Thank you. My mother still dresses me. She still picks out the outfit when I'm down here.
Well, shout out to your mom. Your mom living in Colleyville?
Yes, yes, sir.
Well, shout out to your mom. Ben, this is a national story. I didn't necessarily see it becoming a national story. I thought it would be big in Texas high school football circles. But what happened was in a game on Friday night, a game that San Antonio Jay lost, they end up having two players. Right after a couple of players are ejected, they have two players that hit the official. One of them appears to spear the official. The second guy, once the official's down, he kind of piles on in a loss to a Matt Green-led Marble Falls team. Ben, get us up to date on all the new news that has been breaking over the weekend. I mean, it's kind of a weird weekend for it to break since it's Labor Day weekend. But the UIL's issued a statement. The NFL Referees Association has issued a statement. I've seen people on Fox and CNN talking about it incessantly. What can you tell us about what's going on right now?
Well, right now, this is really the day where things are going to start breaking. And so, like you said, it's a weird weekend for this kind of stuff to break. So when you come back from this Labor Day weekend, people are getting back in their offices. I think that there will be some big news developments that break throughout the day. And right now, honestly, I'm just waiting to see how all that shakes out. But, what we know is that, four players were ejected out of that Jay game, all Jay players, one in the third quarter and then three in the fourth quarter. And then one of the players who ended up spearing the official, according to the game report, stayed in the game and then picked up a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty for kneeing or for a late hit on the quarterback that was kneeing the ball on the final play of the game.
Now, I think you had a little bit of a Twitter discussion with some gentleman who is trying to say that you were use of the word trigger was you were trying to find a justification for these, because I think we can all agree there's no justification for what they did. But it will be interesting to see through the investigation as to why the players went to such why they snapped. I mean, is that something that you think we'll find out within the week? Is Northside ISD, which San Antonio Jay is a part of Northside ISD, is that something that they'll be able to uncover?
I expect that information to be out within the next, within the week for sure, if not the end of the day here on Tuesday. And that's kind of what they've been looking into over the weekend, possible racial comments that were made toward Jay players, like we said in the Express News, over the weekend. That's really what we're all waiting to see. But either way, I don't know. I mean, that still doesn't change the fact that the kids tackled an official. At the end of the day, hate speech is hate speech. But I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe that's protected under First Amendment stuff when it comes to attacking someone. I mean, am I wrong on that? I'm asking y'all since y'all are the venerable DMM reporters
yeah.
over there.
I don't know if, it would certainly change the line of fire
right.
as far as, what the public is perceiving if there was hate speech. But man, that is a slippery slope to start making those types of allegations, and it's going to be very difficult to prove that the official did say anything, as opposed to just having players saying that he did. Now, any ramifications from this going forward? I know both of those players have been suspended from school and suspended from the team until this is resolved. But a lot of people are clamoring for San Antonio Jay to receive some sort of punishment. I guess the only way for us to discover this is if the coaching staff or some member of the program is found complicit in this. But I think that's fairly unlikely, don't you, Ben?
Well, it's going to depend on how it shakes out. And that's what everyone's been asking me. Should Jay receive punishment? And if the whole team is complicit in this, then you could easily see that happening. But if it's only a couple kids, and I think it's unfair to the rest of that team, personally to not let them continue playing. But we don't know. I have no idea how that shakes out. And that's what investigations are for these things to play its course and for those people to find out, the people who are paid and elected to find out how this kind of stuff goes. If the coaching staff was involved, if these players were ordered to go after the referee, or if they just did it out of their own volition. And so if it comes out that the coaching staff, has something to do with this, then you could easily see Jay not playing their game this Friday against Del Rio.
What do you feel like the UIL has the authority to do, either to the team or to the players going forward, as far as never allowing them to play football again?
Section 29 of that the constitution of the UIL, you know, lists a lot of things that can be levied against the team. And I, to be honest, I'm still trying to decipher all of that. As you all know, the constitution rule book is a fun one to read and decipher. So there are some penalties there that can be imposed to team and player. But I think what you're going to see here is the state executive committee might have more power than normal and might have different set of options that's listed under there, considering that this is something that we really haven't seen. Everybody that I've talked to for this story and in regards to the situation has never seen anything like this. I know I've been watching football, you know, since the Cowboys last won a Super Bowl, which was a very long time ago. And in that span, you know, I've never seen anything like this. And I don't know if there's anything been like that before where, you know, it's premeditated. I know that we have the Allen Trinity footage from a few years ago that y'all have been that I watch on y'all's wonderful site. And, you know, that case is a little different, you know, where the kid is, it's still in the manner of the play where the kid goes after the referee. So the kid could have just snapped in the middle of the play. But on this play, I mean, the kid that immediately went after the ref and behind him. I mean, it was premeditated on snap. And so I don't know how it's all going to shake out, to be honest.
Well, you know what? It's interesting, too, Ben. I think it's encouraging that we don't see this more because there's so much video out there that you would think if something like this happened, it's going to be seen. But that also amazes me in the fact that, again, teenage players aren't always thinking logically, heat of the moment. But to think that you could do something like that and that it's not going to be seen, like it would be hidden in the play with all the video angles that are out there and is, you know, omnipresent as video is on the internet now, that just amazes me that those kids would think that, hey, they'd make this happen and nobody would really know and we would get a shot in on an official.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that's going to be and that's what is kind of also shocking, you know, is that kind of rationale was just not there. You know, that these people, I mean, it's not even that. If these people are in front of thousands of people playing a football game, you know, people are still, I mean, granted, the game was over at that point, you know, Marble Falls is on the verge of running out the clock. But, I mean, there were all of these people that are witnesses to what you're about to do. It's not like you're doing something in secret. You're doing this in front of, you know, like I said, thousands of people who are at that game. And so, yeah, that whole situation is still just, it's crazy to wrap your mind around, you know, what happened on Friday.
Ben Baby getting his shine on at San Antonio Express News. That's mysanantonio.com. Ben is at Ben_Baby on Twitter. And we certainly appreciate you joining us on the Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast.
Hey, it is an honor to be on this podcast. Thank you.
Good talking with you.
Hey,
again,
and also
Ben.
Everybody listen to CartCast, which is a San Antonio Express News podcast with David Hinojosa and Ben Weekly.
Hey, thank you.
Let's look real quick at some other games of note over the weekend. I mean, I was certainly not surprised by Allen's big win over Vieira. They start district play going great, but, man, you talk about a little bit of a quarterback controversy. I don't know if it is a controversy. I haven't talked to Coach Tom Westerberg, but Seth Green sat on the bench most of the time in their win over Guyer with a big game for Mitchell Jonke, but he has a huge game against Vieira, throws for 3 touchdowns, 210 yards. Kirby Bennett, the transfer from Parish Episcopal, has a big game, and Lionel McConnell, a transfer from Ohio, has 2 touchdowns in that game. Matt, I guess you could conceivably go into district play with a 2-quarterback platoon. It looks like it's justified at this point.
Well, yeah, what I've heard from reading the story was that they're going to go with whoever has the hot hand. And, you know, that's an easy thing to say, but, boy, that can get a little tricky during a game when you're juggling it. And I know from quarterbacks that I've talked to in the past who are in, you know, in a situation where it's kind of a platoon system, that they have said at times it can be difficult preparing for a game when you don't know I'm doing these first 4 drives. And maybe Allen will get around that and you know, tell a particular quarterback it's yours in the first half.
Seems like that could put a lot of pressure on the quarterbacks themselves, knowing that if one mistake could cost them playing time the rest of the game and going forward.
As far as great quarterback play, you'd expect that Denton Guyer would have some good performances by Sean Robinson, but he has not necessarily played great in the first 2 weeks. They do beat Ennis, though, 22-19. Touchdown run by Christian Moore with about 4.5 minutes to go is the game difference there. Robinson rushes for 60 yards and 2 touchdowns, but he throws for 121. His play is going to need to pick up if they're going to be able to make a run in 6A playoffs. A team that they could face and were bounced from the playoffs last year was South Lake Carroll. South Lake Carroll staring an 0-2 start in the face. They went up to Tulsa to play Tulsa Union, but they come out with a victory. They were down 21 points in the first half, but they rally back. A little bit of a quarterback controversy there. I don't know. I think it might be decided at this point. But Montana Murphy started the season at quarterback in their loss to Westlake. Mason Holmes, I believe is his name, has now taken over the starting role, and he threw for 3 touchdowns and over 300 yards in a very salty performance there. So that might be already decided. He is a junior. Another game of note, man, how about Cedar Hill? 28-17 over against the Arlington Bowie team.
Early.
Yeah, Bowie was shut out against Jesuit the week before, but they actually led at halftime 11-7 before Avery Davis takes over, almost 200 yards passing, 124 yards rushing, and a touchdown. They're going to have to play a lot better against Skyline this week because Skyline is ready to roll.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a real, you know, the judgment game, or how we look at Cedar Hill will be this week against Skyline, because they've beaten good teams, South Oak Cliff, that, you know, it's a 5A team. And I think Bowie is better than they showed in that,
sure,
that first week against Jesuit. And they were probably really pumped up to show that against Cedar Hill. But that Skyline game, boy, I really do feel like that's a pick'em game. It's going to be tough to pick either way. Cedar Hill has great history, and they got a lot of players this year that I'm really impressed with early, and I know what their potential is. But Skyline looked great last week.
A couple of bounce-back wins from teams that were certainly on our radar to start the season. Mansfield gets a nice win over Waco Midway, 45-44. And Mesquite Horn, after their season-opening loss to McKinney-Boyd, they end up kicking a field goal with 38 seconds left. Mark Reyna is the hero. They beat Duncanville, who played much better in their second week, 44-41. Duncanville, under Reginald Samples, though, falls to 0-2.
Horn can score. We know
no
that
doubt.
For sure, and move the ball.
Chris Robertson with a big game there, 5 touchdown passes and a 372 yards in the air. Two teams that we undervalued to start the season who have really taken off. Coppell, nice win over McKinney-Boyd, 34-14. Brady McBride with 3 touchdown passes, all to Josh Fink. And, yeah, they're looking good right now.
A sleeper pick in that district, because you figure it's, at least before the season, you know, it's going to come down to Carroll and Trinity again. But Coppell, I'm appalled. Coppell has played really well in the first couple of weeks, and I think they're a real threat to both Carroll and Trinity.
And Flower Mound Marcus in 6-6A. Man, what an impressive win over Arlington. Arlington team that had scored a whole bunch of points against Duncanville, albeit a lot of them over off of turnovers. But they just dominate that game, 42-17. They improved to 2-0. And they might be looking like the best challenger for Allen at this point, although Plano can certainly make a case.
And Plano East.
Oh,
well,
Plano,
yeah, you know,
East.
And I'd say, you know, back when 6-6A was created, back in realignment 2014, and there was that collective from the 9 schools in that powerhouse district.
Right.
Everybody said, well, football, and it's been great in a lot of sports, but everybody said, oh, it's going to be a powerhouse in football. Well, wasn't that impressive last year? Allen was, obviously.
And Plano West.
And Plano West. But this year, you figure you got, obviously, Allen, Flower Mound Marcus, which is looking great, Plano East, which is 2-0, you got Plano, which is 2-0, and then McKinney-Boyd is 1-1, but one of those 5 teams is not going to make the playoffs, and I think that's, you know, it's going to be pretty painful for a really good team that is not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think if you look at, you know, Louisville's playing pretty well.
Right.
You know, Plano West is playing okay. They lost to Sachse, but, you know, they put up 34 points against Sachse. So, you know, they might have a puncher's chance to get that last spot. It will be very crowded for that last playoff spot, whomever decides to take the reins. Greg, you're high on Plano East for something. You're taking the Matt Diggs role from the old coach. He is a Plano East.
Squeezed
alum
in a Plano East reference,
yeah,
there. So,
I like,
yeah,
that, but, you know, Miklas Malz was our player of the week, right?
Yes, he was.
Impressive
win over Jesuit, which was coming off a big win over Arlington Bowie. So I think they're going to surprise people. They've already surpassed their win total from last year.
Yeah, that is impressive. And they've got a lot of talent. I mean, they've got a lot of young talent. It's not necessarily seniors on that team, although we have a couple of Division I caliber prospects as seniors. But Smalls, their quarterback, I think he's a junior.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got Anthony Hines, who's, you know, been recruited by everybody. He's
and
got,
you know,
like 70-plus officers on their defense as a linebacker.
Hopefully the karma is right for Plano East this year, because I'm just thinking we're talking about Miklas Malz, you know, from the Smalls quarterback family, had Mario and Rico. I think it was 2007 when Plano East started about 6-0. Rico Smalls was their quarterback. He was committed to Virginia, and he was doing tremendous. Hurt his ankle, was out, and, I mean, you talk about off a cliff this season, and they didn't even make the playoffs, I believe. So hopefully things work out better this year, and they certainly are looking pretty good through two games.
5A game of note, and that is Frisco Centennial 30-19 over Lake Dallas. That's a nice win there for—
That was not a nice win for my picks, but no. It was a nice win for Centennial.
Yeah, I mean, Lake Dallas looked great in week one over a big win over Wakeland. Just blew the doors off of Wakeland. But Anthony Pegues, he's the real deal. He's
very
fourth,
impressive.
Yeah, fourth in the area in rushing at this point. He rushed for 185 yards and a touchdown. Centennial made a huge jump, probably one of the biggest jumps up in our rankings. Also of note, the Fighting Kitnas. Fighting Kitnas looking good. They put it on Azle.
Have they made a formal formal request to not be called the Fighting Kitnas yet, or are they embracing it?
I wish they were called the Fighting Kitnas. Less racist than what their current mascot is.
They got a big game this week against Ennis.
Yeah,
big rivalry game.
Yeah, we're going to see exactly where they fit in the pecking order there in that district. And you talk about a salty start. That is certainly it. Although I guess Ennis is in the East Texas district, so it is a good table setter for district play for both of those districts in 14 and 16 5A. Okay, that's it for part one. Coming up, we've got an interview with Coach Derek Roberson of Skyline. And with us now in part two is Skyline Coach Derek Roberson. Coach, congratulations on a huge win against Arlington Martin. I do, however, before we ask you some questions, I do have to tell our listeners a funny story. I'm walking into Forrester Stadium, and Skyline is doing some warm-ups here on the side. I see Coach Roberson. I'm like, hey, Coach, how are you doing? Coach and I have been very friendly since he's been around the district and worked in the administration office. He said his kids are ready, and then he opens up a piece of paper he has in his hand, and it has all the Dallas Morning News picks, Arlington Martin across the board, and you've got it highlighted. Coach, I'm sure you're going to now give us credit for that awesome win, right?
Absolutely. You guys deserve all the credit. I didn't even know. I hadn't even looked at the picks until right before the game. Before we left the school, and I highlighted, and when I gave my little pregame speech, then I pulled it out and showed the kids, and of course they were motivated. So yeah, you guys get all the credit.
Yeah, thanks, Coach. Matt says, we are nothing if not bulletin board material for coaches. But man, what a win there! You get punched in the mouth straight away. Martin has that big kickoff return to start the game, but you answer back. Can you tell me a little bit about the development of quarterback Terrion Randolph? He's looked really comfortable. His numbers weren't necessarily eye-popping, but he did all the things that you needed throughout the course of the game to move the ball efficiently.
Right. It's a process. I mean, he's young. People doesn't realize that this is his first varsity experience, against South Grand Prairie and then last week versus Arlington Martin. And so it's a growing process. We know that we're going to go through some growing pains with him. He's going to make some mistakes. And we have to live with those, but at the same time, he's growing. He has a lot of potential. He's very, very intelligent, and he understands what we want to accomplish on offense. So that helps out a lot.
I was just saying, it's nice, too, with your offense that you can kind of switch up looks when you bring in Ladarrell Randolph
right.
in there and can move him around. I think that it seems like a great role for Ladarrell. Anytime you can get the ball to him, whether he's a receiver or coming out of the Wildcat, he's a great weapon for you guys, too.
That's right. He, like you said, he's a great athlete. He has a lot of varsity experience. He was on the varsity last year, and he was up to the challenge. We contemplated on making him just a starter altogether, but he had so many other attributes from different places on the field. So he was like, well, let's just spot plan at quarterback and change the tempo up some, change the dynamics of the game, put a little bit more stress on the defense when he goes back to quarterback. And I think it's going to work out well as we go further down the road.
Skyline has two of the best playmakers in the Metroplex with Ladarrell Randolph using as a Wildcat role, and then De'Leon Ward, their running back, who's phenomenal. He had another nice game as well. But let's talk about your defense for a second. That was a dominant performance against a Martin team, especially in that first half. I think in the first quarter they were negative 29 yards total offense. Mm-hmm. You said after the game that you thought that was the best front seven. It might be the best front seven in the Metroplex. Were you pleased with your defense, ecstatic with your defense, and do you see yourself being able to do this going forward?
Absolutely. I think that the defense they're kind of setting the tone for our season. I mean, we know we have to grow offensively. People are used to seeing Skyline score a lot of points, and right now we're averaging 23 points a game. So the defense is the backbone of our team right now. They're relentless. They play really fast. And that front seven, we talk about the front seven, but the secondary is really good also. They've had 4 picks in 2 games in the secondary. So, I mean, we're extremely pleased with them. They set the tone each and every week.
Yeah, you mentioned the secondary. I think I probably talked a lot about the front seven. Well, I talked to you about it after the game because they were getting such great penetration against Martin. But there were many times when Martin quarterback Eric Walker, who was really had a great week the week before against DeSoto, had some time, but he just could not find a receiver because your secondary was so good on those receivers. They were so tight in coverage, and that was really impressive.
Yes. They do a good job. I think we have some guys who, in the secondary, they have some smaller school offers, a couple of guys back there. But I think all 4 of the guys that start are actually Division I caliber kids. And so they take pride in their craft. They work on their technique and backpedaling and things of that nature every day. And they've been doing it all summer leading into the season. So the defense is, like, really, really solid. And I think that, you know, we talked about being an underdog or whatnot, and to go into the game, you go into Forrester where you haven't lost a game since 2007, and then you actually have these kind of kids. You know, I think that I was kind of shocked that we were underdogs, being that we were going to be at Forrester. We have a solid defense. I knew that the offense wasn't where it was supposed to be yet, but, you know, we're working on it, so.
Well, Coach, you were an underdog last week. Odds are you probably will be an underdog this week.
Yeah.
It might be a pick'em game against Cedar Hill.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen on tape from the new Cedar Hill with all those new faces?
Man, you know what? When you have a good program, the faces change, but the level of play doesn't. And that's what I see from Cedar Hill and Coach McGuire. They have a great program. They're solid. They're sound. They still have great playmakers on offense. And then some salty guys on defense as well. But so I expect for it to be a battle. I mean, to me, it's a toss-up right now. I don't make predictions, but I think it's going to be an outstanding football game.
How do you scheme controlling a dynamic quarterback like Avery Davis?
Well, you know, we faced a kid the week before, 2 weeks ago. What's his name? Ellensworth from Eisworth. South Grand Prairie.
Yeah.
Eisworth, yeah.
Sure.
And he, same type of kid. Both of them have the potential to break your back in a game off a scramble. I mean, Cedar Hill's quarterback did it last week. He took a play like 60 yards for a touchdown, and he looked phenomenal doing it. And so what you do is you stand your base defense, and you have somebody spy him. You know, and that's what our plan was versus South Grand Prairie. Same plan against him. We got a great middle linebacker. He's not the prototypical middle linebacker because he's small in stature, but he can run like the wind. And so that's our game plan. We're going to play base defense, let our guys make plays. Everyone has a gap responsibility. You maintain your gap, and then you run to the football.
Well, Coach, we certainly appreciate you being here. We're going to close with our 3 questions segment.
Okay.
DISD is looking to pass a $1.6 billion bond issue, and I know a lot of that is for educational purposes, but I think they're going to spruce up some athletic facilities as well. If you had your pick of anything under the sun that you would add to Skyline's facilities right now, what would it be?
Probably be lights for the field, for our practice field. I mean, because when some of the time changes, we're going to suffer. And we can't go over to Forrester every day because it's a transportation issue. And so I would ask for lights just so we could practice the amount of time that we need to be prepared for, going to the playoffs.
Although Arlington Martin coach Bob Wager picked a different movie, and you certainly have that option, which do you prefer, Friday Night Lights, the TV show, or Varsity Blues, the movie?
I would go with Friday Night Lights. I thought it was a great movie.
And the final question. Coach, I've noticed you're getting a little salt and pepper in your hair. Which gives you more gray hairs, being in the DISD administration office or being on the sidelines on Friday nights?
Man, that's a toss-up. I would say probably being on the sidelines. I love it more, but at the same time, you have more worries, being a coach.
Skyline coach Derek Roberson, thank you very much for being with us on the Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Part three. Hey, that was a great interview.
That was.
Yeah.
It seemed to just go by quickly. Very well. Very well done.
You know, I really like the new format. We've using our phone setup. We got to thank Brian, who's part of the AV crew here at the Morning News, getting this all set up. It's really impressive, and we certainly hope that you guys enjoy those phone interviews as well. Let's take a look at this week's schedule real quick. Thursday night, actually some pretty good games on Thursday night. I like Bishop Lynch and Saxey. That's an interesting one right there. Lynch 1-0, Saxey 2-0. But I think the big game of the night will be Denton Ryan and Wiley East. That is at Wiley ISD Stadium. Both teams 2-0. Ryan with an impressive win, made a big jump in the 6A rankings, and Wiley East.
Eno Benjamin,
just rolling. You know, they looked good last week as well. But those games certainly stand out. Although a sleeper, Rowlett and Keller, both teams 2-0. On Friday night, district play starts. Can you believe it?
Well, in some districts. One district.
But district play starts.
9-5A and 6-6A.
Before you know it, it'll be November.
But there's not necessarily super impactful, which is not a word. Maybe it is.
I think it is. Yeah.
Well, we'll just say
you're
it is.
You're clear on that one.
Games in 6-6A, you've got Marcus versus Louisville, Plano at Hebron, East at Flower Mound, and McKinney Boyd at Allen. I think there's decided favorites in all those games.
But with that district, if you fall on your face, like, for example, the Louisville game. Louisville is competitive, but they bet you need to win that game if you're going to be in the top four of that district.
They're going to need to pick up some wins and pick them up quick. So you cannot have a week of stumble. It's got to be focus every week. But, man, I like this 9-5A schedule. Two really good games, I think, there on Friday night. You've got Heritage at the Colony. The Colony has stumbled with losses to start the season against Saginaw and Corsicana. But Heritage has a very, I think Heritage is the favorite in that district. They have to play the Colony, who is picked as one of the favorites in that district to start the season, and Centennial in back-to-back weeks. So their fortunes could be determined really quickly how they play in those first two games. And then another game I think of note is Lone Star versus Frisco Wakeland at Toyota Stadium. Both those teams, I think, are in the mix for the top part of that district. I think those are two of the better teams in that district as well. Other games of note, Guyer goes on the road to face Wichita Falls Rider, which I think is a really intriguing game. Garland faces Rockwall Heath in one of those cross, 5A, 6A rivalries. Rockwall Heath is flying under the radar. That game is at AT&T Stadium, but I think Heath, I don't really know a ton about them. They graduated some really good guys, but it seems like they're really rolling along this year.
That's one of six games at AT&T Stadium over Friday and Saturday.
That is true, and I will be covering at least one of them. I'm covering a game on Saturday. We'll talk about Saturday's schedule in a second. How about a nice rivalry game? Argyle and Salina, really two of the three teams that are in our area that have a puncher's chance at making a deep playoff run, excluding Kennedale. I think in the mix there for those three. Coppell hosts Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, one of the teams that people look at in Oklahoma as one of the powers. It's not Jinx or Tulsa Union, but it's in the same mix.
Is that where Coach Whitson, now at South Grand Prairie, came from?
That's where he came from, absolutely. Ennis at Waxahachie, big rivalry game and big test for the Fighting Kittenas.
Yeah, I think Jordan Kitna, the Waxahachie quarterback, is really going to be tested by a good guy or a good Ennis defense that held Guyer down for the most part last week.
And you want some added spice to this rivalry. Trayvon Smith, Ennis's star running back, who's led the team in rushing both weeks. He transferred this season from Waxahachie, moved in with his dad over there, and he's playing really well. Duncanville at Mesquite, intriguing game there. Mesquite surprised a lot of people, surprised me, with a big win over Garland last week.
Yeah, I talked to Coach Robinson after that game, and he said that their offensive line really stepped up, and he was really pleased by the way they did or the way they played, and that made a big difference in that second game because they had a tough first week, but they really stormed back in that Garland game.
Mansfield at Mansfield Summit. I guess you're not really at Mansfield Summit. It's at Vernon Newsom Stadium. It's the two Mansfields. And Waco Midway takes its tour through the Mansfield ISD. They get to host Timberview, which is a very difficult matchup there. How about Pilot Point and Aubrey?
How about it?
I don't know. Pilot Point's big, and Aubrey is struggling to start the
season. I'm
going to
go with Pilot Point.
The Denton Record Chronicle will have great coverage.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about that Skyline-Cedar Hill game. You know, you're talking about two heavyweights, probably the biggest game of the week, again. Skyline certainly scheduling up before they get into 9-6A play. But, man, I was really impressed with what they did last week. Can that defense control a much more dynamic quarterback? I know that Coach Roberson said that it's kind of like Greg Eisworth, like a little bit, but mm-hmm. I think Davis is a little bit more shifty and a little bit more speedy. He's more of a Sean Robinson type.
Yeah, he's a scary type because he can throw the ball, but also he is a home run guy when he gets outside. If you let him go, he's going to go for a big yardage. I don't know. This is one of those, you know, I'll believe it when I see it as far as being able to slow down Cedar Hill. But I, like I said before, I really feel like it's a pick'em game. It could come down to turnovers because Skyline was real solid and took care of things when they needed to put away Martin. And I think, you know, their offense, they're probably going to need some more offense this week against Cedar Hill because I don't see Cedar Hill getting held to, you know, three touchdowns. I think Skyline's going to score about 35 points, something like that. But it's a great game, and love these non-district things. You know, both these programs are just known for just loading up in non-district to get themselves ready for district.
Nice schedule of Saturday games. As Greg mentioned, there's six games at AT&T Stadium. What was that last game? That last game is Mesquite, Horn, and Rockwell.
11:45 p.m.,
yeah,
I believe.
My goodness. It's supposed to start at 8:30.
That's on Friday night.
Yeah, on Friday night. But on Saturday, yeah, there's four games. You've got an opener, Highland Park versus Prosper. Highland Park's going to need to bounce back, and
right.
Prosper's actually started the season fairly well. Then the game I'm covering there at 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock kick between Lancaster and Eulish Trinity. That's going to be a real interesting test. Lancaster now the number one team in our 5A poll. You know, last couple of years, you know, scheduling very difficult. Now you ask you know, their coach, you know, what are you trying to get out of this game? And Coach Chris Gilbert will say, I'm trying to make sure that we play a tough opponent, playoff caliber, really test us, but you don't want to get people injured. And Trinity is exactly the type of team, given their size and physicality, that you could pick up an injury.
Yeah, and unfortunate. Well, it's a double-edged sword for what Chris Gilbert's got. I mean, part of the reason he's playing this Trinity game is because there's not a lot of teams that want to play Lancaster right now in non-district. So hopefully it works out for both of them that Lancaster can give Trinity a test and both teams can come out of there, you know, without a lot of injuries.
The third game is Midland versus Hearst LD Bell. Interesting matchup there. And then the nightcap is Birdville against Trophy Club Byron Nelson. Byron Nelson with a handful of really interesting prospects.
And Birdville's had a tough start to the season.
They have as well. They have indeed. Interesting prospects there for Byron Nelson, including Brandon Bowen, their rush end, who was a state qualifier in the high jump. You don't see that very often. 6'8 high jumper.
Big. Yep.
He'll just jump over the line. And
I know.
Wasn't he the state champion?
He might have been the state champion. He was the regional champion for
okay.
sure. South Oak Cliff at DeSoto is the other game that rounds out that schedule.
Talk about playing a tough
one of those teams
schedule,
is going to be 0-3 to start the season.
Well, South Oak Cliff was 0-3 last year, right? And then made their run.
Yes, but they did really well against South Grand Prairie last week, a 14-10 loss, but to really kind of control the pace of that game. It'll be interesting to see what they do against DeSoto. Tristan Wallace hasn't necessarily had a great start to 2015, but the Ohio State commit is certainly capable of doing big things. Matt, any final thoughts about week three?
No, I'm just hoping that all our teams get out of there injury-free and officials don't get blindsided.
Hey, Matt is going to be doing a column this week
on that
incident, talking to some officials and coaches about the craziness that spawned from that Jay attack.
Yepers.
Greg, any thoughts on this week? We should say Avi Zalen is not here, but our live scoring is now on our new website. It's a beta site. You can see links to it.
I think because of the way we berated him last week.
Well, no, they rolled it out last week. There's still some things that needed to be fixed.
It's really cool.
It looks great, and it does kind of mimic what the app did. The sport, the RIP, pour one out for the Sports Day HS app.
It looks really good on
mobile. It does look great on mobile, and there are instructions as to how to get that and set your team as your homepage. Anything that you see that you think is a bug or you know might need to be improved, just you know send it to us and we'll see. You know, tweet us and we'll forward that along to our development team. It is an ongoing process.
C. Smith at Dallas News.
Thankfully, I'm not C. Smith at DallasNews.com. All right. So thanks very much for listening to us this week. You guys have a great week of games in week 3, and we'll catch you next week.